It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day. You know, one thing I wanted to make sure that we did today was we got to know about some of the stuff that's in the news. I mean, some of the things that, you know, I find to be of interest. And one of those things is perpetual motion. Is it even possible? Is it happening? Is it really? Well, I haven't got that. You know, it's just on freedomsphoenix.com right now. I mean, if you're not getting Freedoms Phoenix, you're not being fully informed. Go to freedomsphoenix.com, and what do we have? We have a gentleman from Dublin, or, well, Ireland somewhere. I think it's Dublin. And they have it's a technology that's called, what do they call it here? Over-unity. Over-unity means that it's that when you are able to produce more power than you consume, well, that's kind of this perpetual motion thing. Well, they had to go through a series of tests. Does it degrade the magnets? Does it degrade the electrical circuits? Is it pulling the extra energy from the magnets? Is it pulling it from somewhere? I mean, where is it getting this from? Well, you know, we're going to find out more about, see if I can get these guys on. But this has been the holy grail of, is can we create more energy than we're solving? I mean, than we're using. Well, what they're doing is now they're making this technology available for people to light their license in it, so then they can use it for different applications. You know, I don't know, big giant stations, you know, power generation. You can put it in your basement. You can have it on your George Jetson mobile. So, is this going to happen? I don't know. They're making a big deal out of it, so we're going to follow that and we'll find out. You know, a lot of times we'll just hold off for a little while. A lot of this has happened in the past, and there have been a lot of promises. Yeah, we're getting ready. We're almost there. Yeah. We put it off. Well, it looks like they finally did it, so we're going to find out what's going on. There was a I follow this stuff every now and then because I know what's going to happen. You know, sooner or later, it's going to be some kid in grandma's basement that took his mother's ionic breeze and, you know, took a screwdriver to it and married it with a toaster, and all of a sudden they're going to be producing zero-point energy. Well, there's a thing called zero-point energy, and I had spent a little bit of time researching that, and it basically came down to this. There is... There's reality, okay, based on what? I mean, you know, we live in a dimension at a certain energy level of all matter. Now, think about this. I think, you know, there's going to be some scientists calling in, correct me, but, you know, an angstrom is a measure of distance, and I can't remember if that's the word they use. There is a distance at a certain energy level between the proton, the single proton inside of a hydrogen atom, and where an electron is. Okay, you got a distance. We're at a certain frequency. At different energy levels, they're at different distances. Why? I don't know. God had a cookbook. I mean, you know, we're gonna have it this distance, at this amount of heat, at this amount, it's this far. Based on what? Well, I guess the nuclear weight, the mass of the proton, the speed of the electron, which, you know, is an electron a particle, or is it, you know, energy? And you got, you know, mass of a proton, which is mass. I mean, it's something there. It's not converted to energy, but you got this energy thing that's going around you. I mean, all these quantum physics kind of, you know, whatever. The super ooper duper theory, the unification theory, Einstein's going on about it, everybody, the holy grail is that you have the weak nuclear force and the strong nuclear force. weak nuclear force, you know, I know somebody's going to correct me on all this, but the weak nuclear force is, I mean, the gravity force is gravity. You know, you have a planet out here and it creates a, what they call a gravity well. You have a, it's a kind of a, like a dip in gravity, and it's linked to time, and you have all, you know, just where you get your black hole stuff where time and gravity are kind of, you know, brought together. You get the fourth dimension, you know, yada, yada, yada. I don't want to complicate it too much, but what comes down to is this. You have the strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force. The strong nuclear force, you got to think, you have protons, and you know if you have two north poles of a magnet put together, they repel each other, right? Well, you know, protons are positively charged. Why are they sticking together? What brought that on? What kind of energy you possibly have to have a bunch of, you know, positives all sit there, you know, stuck to each other? Well, there's a lot of energy involved. So what happens when you have a thermonuclear device, when you have a hydrogen bomb goes off, you're releasing all that energy. You know, it's fission, you know, separation. Fusion is when you're bringing it together. So I'm going, okay. So it takes even a fusion bomb, a nuclear bomb, to detonate a fission bomb. I mean, that's a lot of energy to release a lot of energy. Okay, so they got that all going on. Then they have, you know, electromagnetism. You know, this is radio waves and light and all this kind of stuff. You have, let's see, mass creates, there's four main particles. I bring this up, you know, I'm getting more deep into it than I was prepared for. But what they wanted to do is there is a unification theory. All of this matter and energy, there is a conversion that takes place. You never lose anything. I mean, you have, it's either in the form of matter or it's in the form of energy. And there's a transition between them, either chemically, you burn it, atomically, whatever. I mean, there is, it's mass energy. I mean, it's all the same. E equals MC squared. Okay. You want to know how much you do the formula? It's energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. So it's an enormous number. You take a book off the shelf and you run the country for a week. I mean, you know, it's just enormous amounts of energy there when you totally convert all the matter into energy. And that's what you talk about when you take away all the energy that keeps the distance between a nucleus and the orbit of the electrons, and you take all the mass in the universe and you put it in one place, and you take all the energy and you squeeze it down, you got the entire universe in the size of a grapefruit. I'm not making this up. I mean, this is the amount of energy that we're talking about here. Well, zero-point energy, as I understood it, what they were talking about is we're at a certain frequency. You know, there's a reason why distance between electron and proton is set at, you know, X. Why isn't it 2x? I don't know. Because. Then you get into things like string theory. And I got, it's kind of like a Song of Solomon. You know, it's like God's thing. You know, there's a frequency to the universe out there. Well, what happens if we're at out of phase? If you watch old, you know, Star Trek episodes, if you have your, you got a baseball bat and you hit a ball. Yeah, baseball coming out, you hit it with a baseball bat. Well, most of that is just empty space. It's a force field that's hitting another force field, and then there it goes. What happens if the ball is slightly out of phase? It's not at the same wavelength as the bat when it goes through it. You know, it's mostly just open space anyway. So what happens if you're able to hit this membrane, you know, this force field, the ether that they talked about, the ether? That's why they call it an ethernet. You know, when you got the plug in the back of your computer, they thought information, you know, just kind of traveled out in this ether thing. That's what they called the energy, you know, Tesla stuff. It's just this ether. What are they talking about? If you have the ability to tap into that ether, you tap into this frequency that we are now, a certain speed at a certain wavelength, at a certain ability to tap into it, it's like a trampoline. You push on it at a certain speed, at a certain wavelength, at a certain intensity, and then it bounces back. What happens when it bounces back at a greater energy than you did to tap it? Well, if you can just keep tapping it, you know, you're getting back energy. I mean, they call it zero-point energy, and you just kind of, you know, boom, you just get more back. And then I need to prepare for this to help explain it better, and I'll get you a good guess. But the thing is that these theories have been out there a long time, and they see it in certain applications in computers. A friend of mine's son, and he's working in the back doing some upgrades for Freedom's Phoenix, he was telling me when they get down to such small little plasma fields that they got these little bitty balls of lightning. I mean, at, you know, quantum physics, that little bitty electrons going around, zooming around on field because they're got to convert from optical fibers into copper. I mean, you still got, you know, an optical fiber is coming in with all this information in the back of your computer. Well, you still got like keyboard that you're punching stuff and you're putting an interface into your computer is copper. How do you make that interface? And at such small little itty bitty spaces, you start creating a whole new physics. You know, we got this roadblock, this hurdle we got to get over. Well, how are we doing this? And they start creating energies that create more than what they put into it. They were finding out all kinds of new stuff, and it's coming to fruition now. I'll do a little bit of research here in the break and tell you where we're at.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, just another band here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Yeah, I'm looking this over, and the name of the company is Orbo, O-R-B-O Technology, and it just launched this out. And the only thing I, you know, that gave me interest, because you keep hearing about perpetual motion machine, blah, 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 blah. And for the past, I guess about 3 years, I did a Google alert. You can go on Google and you put in, you know, words like you put, you know, your own name, or you put in an organization you're interested in or a stock you're interested in. And I have a couple of these, and I go, what do I do to keep track of this? You know, what's the one thing that I would put? So I put plasma energy because I knew that it was going to be something to do with the plasma. Now, this one didn't come up under that, but there was going to be something that was going to be created because there was this problem they were having with computers as they get smaller and smaller and smaller and more powerful and smaller, because there are certain physics that get in their way of transferring of information. I mean, you have a whole nother quantum physics that get involved when you get down really teeny tiny. So I'm going, all right, well, I'll put that in. Every now and then something will pop up. And I'm going, all right, 0 point, you know, energy, I put that in. I do a little wiki on this. And every now and then I just keep checking because I know sooner or later, and a lot of people argue that Tesla already did it. You know, there was already, he's just yanking energy out of the atmosphere. I mean, you would think at least, you know, solar, you know, just a solar energy. You know, nobody's doing anything with that, just sitting there making energy. You know, there's that. You think that's the only one? I mean, really? I mean, heck, we got moving wind. You know, where does the energy from that come from? It comes from the sun. You know, you got other, you know, more subatomic stuff going on. Well, you know, there's enormous amounts of energy just in stuff. Heck, and, you know, the fingernail clipping. I mean, lots. Run your car for a week, you know, because these enormous amounts of energy in matter. That's why you have thermonuclear detonations create such an enormous explosion from, you know, something that fits in somebody's trunk. I mean, it's enormous amount of energy that's in matter. It's how do you get it? How do you control it? How do you access it? How do you, I mean, I don't want to die in the process. So I keep track of these things, and it's in this optimism, just in faith in human ingenuity, is that, you know, if it hasn't already, it's coming. And then what? What happens when we can, you know, provide energy for ourselves? What happens when we are able to just sit on the sidelines and watch our something the size of a dishwasher make all the energy that we need to pull water out of the air with condensation, cool and heat our home, power all our goodies, charge our little spaceship, heck, have it on the spaceship. We can commute back and forth to Mars over a period of, you know, over the weekend. To think that this is not coming is to not really understand how rapidly we have got to where we are just in my lifetime. I was born in 1961. I'm a senior citizen of the X generation. growing up on Star Trek, watching this, heck, I expected this stuff to be here by now. Probably would have been if it wasn't for government regulation and all kinds of other problems. I keep an eye on three things on Freedom's Phoenix just to have a concept of what's coming. Those three things are energy, transportation, communication. With those three things, humanity can expand independent of any kinds of controls. If you have something like the internet where you can communicate with anyone on the planet instantaneously, oh, and have it translated by Google for you, by the way, you know, verbally, you know, remember you had the translator, universal translator they'd hold out, you know, and could talk to any alien or something on Star Trek. They have those now. Seriously. They're just like a little PDA. You talk into it and you hit what language and you just hold it up and it talks. You know, even better than that, my son, 2 years ago, he was going to college. I get them, it's called a smart pen. You write whatever you want on a piece of paper, then highlight it. You know, we just run over it and then tap a card with a different language on there, and it takes what you wrote with your handwriting and translates it into whatever language, and it just speaks out of the pen. This is not later. This is now. How does this change everything? You don't have governments that have translators that go, imagine this. You read the book Shogun by James Clavell, where you have these ambassadors, which are always, you know, from the church, and you had competing churches. You had the Pope that represented, you know, Catholicism around the planet. They were like their own empire. Then you had the Protestants, you know, that, you know, later became the Church of England. That's why they kind of separated. They couldn't get what they wanted, get his divorce or whatever from the Pope. So they go, oh, sorry, I got my Church of England there. I win. So you have these competing ideologies going, and they'll have ambassadors. One guy will go and tell the shogun or the head of whatever country. Now, this is particular story was in Japan. And they'll say, hey, yeah, we represent all the white peoples. Now, the guys got boats, came here, you know, what this is the deal. Then you have the Portuguese came, and they go, we're not part of that deal. We don't know what they're talking about. Now, we got another deal. How about, you know what the real deal here is that they've carved up your country. You belonged over here, and this, you didn't know that? You didn't get the memo? What happens when each individual person can just walk up and they have a little PDA and they go and they just start talking to anybody that they want? You lose collective thinking. You lose the ability to have large numbers of people represented by few people. When the Chinese people are able to get, that's a big thing threat right now, is whether Google's going to leave China. Look, you try and control us too much, don't even think we can do without China. You know, we leave, you guys do be on your own, we're out of here. And the people will revolt. You know, so that kind of argument's going on. But what happens when you have a quarter of the entire planet's population for the first time all of a sudden can communicate with anybody around the world? I had dinner last week with friends and their wives, and two of the friends, both of them, they didn't know each other before they got married to these two friends, but both the women are Chinese and they speak Mandarin. And I wanted to ask them, I go, how do you communicate? I mean, because I see Chinese typing on a regular keyboard like we have, and they call them QWERTY boards. And I just found out why they call the regular keyboard that you have, you know, they call it QWERTY. Because on the top left, it's spelled QWERTY. So they call it a QWERTY board. And the reason the keyboard was set up the way it was, because when you had manual typewriters and you had that big arm, it goes chink, 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 or thunk, 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 as it would go and hit the roll and type on the paper, you couldn't have certain combinations of letters that would be too common next to each other, like T and H. You know, you didn't want to have it in such a way that they were both hitting, they get stuck. You ever do that playing with a typewriter, you're typing, all of a sudden the arms got stuck with each other in certain combinations? So they did this QWERTY keyboard the way it was so that you didn't have it get all bunched up on the roller up there. So I go, okay, cool. That's one more thing I know. But how is it if you're Chinese and you deal with big, you know, characters, how the heck are you typing that? And I've seen foreign exchange students, you know, staying at friends of my kids. They come over and I said, show me how you do it. It's like a T, T9 is how you use your phone to type. And then my kids, you know, the thumbs going at warp speed and they're using numbers to type. I mean, it's just because they can. But anyway, so they would be typing with this. All right. How do you translate? Well, they show me a Google app. They go in, they'll type whatever, or they pull and highlight something in English. Boom. It's in Chinese. We had that on Freedom's Phoenix. On the top right of Freedom's Phoenix, you'll see it says translate. You know, just translate page. You can translate anything. Communication. What happens when the entire planet bypasses any central planning or control or government and can communicate with each other? Now empower these guys with power, energy. Then you make it easy for them to transport within an hour, 90 minutes from New York to Paris. What happens? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I want to break free.
You know, there's so many of these innovations. I was going to talk about some other stuff. I'm just not in the mood. You know, I mean, let's look at the future. I mean, let's start, you know, what's waiting on us? What's, you know, kind of got on this theme. So I want to continue this discussion because it just makes me feel better. You know, the future is so bright and it's going to be in spite of, we live such a high standard of living in spite of all the problems and the regulations and the controls and the central planning. We just had on 60 Minutes last couple of weeks, they did a thing called the Bloom Box. This came about by NASA. There were scientists at NASA that needed to prove that they could make oxygen on bases that they would have on Mars. They go, hey, you know, we can't possibly take enough oxygen. You got to come up with some kind of oxygen manufacturing, make an I don't die thing. Okay. What they did is they came up with kind of a fuel cell to where you would put hydrogen or carbon dioxide or, you know, something, you know, some energy or a fuel source in on one side, and you have a solar energy coming in the loop that kind of create a current, and then it would produce oxygen coming out the other side. You'll see, got this. Cool, done. Let's go to Mars. Well, they cancel the Mars trip. So they go, well, all right, well, we'll just reverse this. We'll go ahead and have oxygen come in, you know, like air on this one side, and we'll have a fuel like natural gas will create, you know, supply the hydrogen over here, and then it'll be a fuel cell. It'll create electricity as opposed to the fuel and electricity creating the oxygen. We'll have the oxygen and the fuel creating electricity. Okay. Well, if you got to have some kind of fuel in there, what's the point? You know, well, it's much more efficient. It uses half as much of natural gas as you would to get the same amount of energy. So I'm going, okay, you know, well, why would I want to do that? It'll save me some money. So Google, to power a bunch of their servers, they get a bunch of these big boom boxes, like a forklift. It's probably about, you know, 6 feet by 6 feet, you know, square and probably a couple of feet wide. They go and put, you know, a whole bunch of these in sequence. They go Walmart, you know, one of their headquarters have. They go to another place. And of course, with all, you know, government subsidies and so on, that's probably another reason, and tax rebates and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how energy efficient it gets. But, you know, this is how it starts. Somebody just says, hey, you know, I can do this. Then you start looking at other things to save energy. You know, what happens if you could just have ships use less energy if they have less friction? There was a guy, a story where there was a gentleman, he goes, you know, how is it that, you know, like porpoises, they have a certain kind of texture to their skin that makes them much more, I want to say, hydrodynamic. So they go, all right, well, what if we duplicated that on the skins of submarines, on boats? Then they go and they look at one. This one guy looks at these water spiders. They walk on the water tension of the water, the surface area, and they start to realize that, you know, they don't have it sticking to the water. Because if they stuck to the water, well, then they wouldn't be able to lift their feet to walk. They're like not really part of the water. It's not penetrating the surface tension. They're not, okay, well, what is it? Is there a coating? Is it wax? Is there, you know, so it wasn't a chemical reaction. It was a physical property of the way the hairs were on their feet. So what do? It's not a uniform, you know, hair. It's not like a hairbrush. You know, you have a certain size and length. And it's more complicated than that. It's like short and long and wide and thin and curled and curved. So they take these different hairs and they kind of put it on a surface, but how do they do that? Well, think about this, trying to do a mind picture. You take a ceramic, which is kind of pitted, and it's got holes like a, you know, a close-up version, it looks like a sponge, all right? So let's say you take this coating, this ceramic or this paint, you know, they just, you know, paint the hull or something. So you got this paint on there and it's porous. Well, then you put this polymer in there. It's kind of a plasticky stuff. And you cover it with plastic. So you got this like a window tinting. And then you kind of heat it. And then you peel it off. When you peel it off, it creates little like fibers. It'd be like you have an ice cream cone. You're making an ice cream, smooth ice cream cone into a cone. And you're pulling it. It's going. And then you stop it and you kind of pull it down. And it makes a nice little bend over question mark looking thing. So you get the right temperature on this, you peel the film off, and you get all these little hairs that kind of were inside this porous ceramic material, and it makes all these kinds of different designs and these threads and such that repel water. It rolls over it like it was a ball. Normally when you have a raindrop or something will go on it, and you put Rain-X on your windshield or liquid glass, you know, which is a sealant, or you put, you know, wax on it, Carnauba, whatever, it'll bead up, but you still, you know, get a trail. You know, it's kind of like a tail as it rolls down because there's some resistance to it. It's grabbing onto something. With these physical properties, not chemical, not a sealant, not a wax, it's these hairs. Because nature does it that way. It's the most efficient way of doing it. And they figured out a way of doing it by having a certain substance that they put a film over on a substrate that's kind of porous, and then they peel it off. There's no resistance. You do this to a hull of a boat, how much energy do you save? Put it on your sailboat. You put it on in your bathrooms. You know, all of a sudden, tile's made this way. You don't have water spots anymore. Your shower door's got this on it. I mean, the applications are, I don't know what. You know, it's the surface of your golf shoes. You know, things don't get dirty. You know, oh, and they were using this in other methods and putting it on, even having this as glass. You would think it'd be more porous, but the water won't stick to it, and it takes all the dirt along with it. It's like self-cleaning. You go, you know, these little things is why we are able to have the standard of living that we've had now in spite of all the bleeding the government coffers. We were in trouble after the SNL scandal happened in the early 90s. Manufacturing was leaving this country. We had, you know, they call it the Rust Belt. You had Detroit going down. We had please come save us. And you had Asian car companies coming and open manufacturing in the United States. But you know what really saved us? It was computer technology. All of the efficiencies that came with technology, how much more work and socializing do you, and cheaper do you enjoy because of your smartphone, because of computers? Because of the ability to communicate, how much more productive are you? And did that translate into a higher standard of living? Yeah, for a lot of people, that at least sustained it pretty much. Then we're living on debt and everything. This morning on the morning show, we played it took over an hour for us to get the whole thing out on our breaks and such. of Peter Schiff giving a presentation to a business group in Connecticut. He's running for U.S. Senate. Peter Schiff, now, you know, sum it up for you. Peter Schiff is running for U.S. Senate, and he says against Dodd, Senator Dodd, it's, you know, anybody better than that, because he says it's not an if thing. It's an already happened thing. We're going down. This is going to get really, really, really bad. I predicted what was going to happen with the subprime loans. I predicted what was going to happen in the bubble of the housing market that was created by Greenspan lowering interest rates because he tried to reinflate the economy after the dot-com bust and 9/11. They're trying to put it off again, doing the same thing. They got a big giant fire. They threw gasoline on it, and they're going to throw some more gasoline on it. And every time the fire is getting bigger, they go get another bucket of gasoline. And he's going, this, and they just keep inflating it. And what? Now Bernanke's talking about, you know, deflation. He's going to start, you know, reducing the money supply. After they did all this, well, you know, then you're going to have deflation. A bunch of people are going to go out of work based on that. I mean, which hasn't happened anyway. But I'm telling you, we're in for big, 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 big problems. And he goes, when this happens, you know, I got 6 years as a term as a U.S. senator. During that 6 years, I'm not going to be able to stop it. But when it happens, you know, at least these guys will be able to have one of them, a senator, explain to them what happened and quit listening to all these guys. He goes, I'm on cable news shows all the time predicting this, and they're all making fun of me. We had them up on Freedom's Phoenix. That bunch of this stuff up on Freedom's Phoenix. You just go with the Freedom's Phoenix and hit the search option, put in Peter Schiff. You can watch all kinds of stuff. And he said, look, this is going. And they'd laugh. And now they have congressional hearings. They have special seminars. They bring all these people in, explain to us what happened. And who are the guys that they bring in? The guys that were laughing at him years ago. Do they ask him to come in? No. Now he offered, hey, I'll come out and explain it to you. Heck no. We don't want you to explain. We just want to spin it. Because they're going to keep robbing us. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Well, at least our little world, or our piece of it, and probably for the better. The better be good. I vote better. You know, if I got, yeah, I got a vote, you know, I get a vote, I vote better. Let's do better. And what's better? How do you determine what is better? I'll tell you what's better. What's better for me is I just want to be, you know, left alone to go and produce and, you know, encourage other people to and provide me more goodies. Give me some goodies. You want to give me more goodies and you know, a better mousetrap, and I get to go buy the goodies? I want your goodies. The problem is that they you're not allowed to get that, or they didn't pay his right permit, or they didn't get, you know, whatever. I see all this going away, and we need to position ourselves in order to take advantage of it. How do you do that? It's communication. Communication, transportation, energy. When you have a great product and a great idea, and you can communicate it with other people that want to get access to it, and they can make use of it. And if it takes energy and it doesn't cost a whole bunch of money to use it or to transport it, and you got transportation mechanisms that are cheap, easy, fast, and efficient, you know, the world changes. This has been happening right in front of us very quickly. And the big bad guys are losing central planning control. They do not, they don't like the fact that, you know, we got people able to communicate with each other and bypass any language barrier. Who's got this universal translator thing going on? I see them. You fly on the airlines and you'll have little Sky magazines. You know, they got these all kind of whiz bang gadgets, you know, for you and your dog and whatever in these magazines. And you know, a lot of it's kind of cool stuff. Well, one of them, you know, is Universal Translator. That's what they call it. Universal Translator. I put in, all of a sudden, oh, there's an app for my Droid phone, my iPhone, my BlackBerry. This is, do you understand what this means? No more central planning. No more somebody speaking for you. No more barriers, hurdles, pitfalls, moats, castle walls, no more. But they're going to try. They have to, or they're going to lose control. And if you're not in control, you're out of control. So they create boogeymen. We're going into a very interesting time. I'm very optimistic. I'm very encouraged by what I've seen happen in my lifetime, adult time. The more people had the ability to communicate with each other, the more peaceful they became. The more they understood each other, the more they were able to express themselves, the more they'd be able to communicate improvements in, you know, providing their own food. Heck, just learn how to grow stuff. You know, got chickens, huh? Do you get your chickens? Last night I came home from my trip, and friend of mine's wife was making fun of me because I was, got chickens, and she goes, "No, you gotta say it this way. Got chickens." Do you? This is amazing how efficient they are at converting garbage into organic eggs. I wow! All our friends, they make more than we can possibly consume. I can you survive on that? I'm like, you know, but yeah. In the backyard of central Phoenix in the middle of the desert, whatever. The future is very bright because it's going to be very difficult to put fear in the people that have access to this information about how to just stay alive and thrive. So they're going to have to stop this communication. So where do they go? They're going to have to go after energy. You know, prices are going up on energy. Utility, who gives the monopoly of access and distribution rights on energy? Oh, you have to get off grid. Transportation, you know, you got checkpoints on the highways and roads now. Even as an activist, you know, you're going out now, they do all this TSA checking at the airport. Now you're training your little 3-4-year-old. I see it all the time. Every time I go flying, oh, no, take your shoes off for the nice man. They do. And, this last trip, you know, it's probably one of my better trips. You know, didn't have too much of a hassle. Just went Austin back one, you know, no stop, and went there back, and nobody gave us too much of a hassle. This is probably one of the more pleasurable ones. And there was this little girl. She was about 4 years old, and her mom goes, "Now take off your shoes and put it up in here and do this." And you got it. She goes, "Why?" Just because, she goes, "But why?" And I couldn't help myself. I go, "Good question." And it just went off. You know, but, yeah, keep it up, girlfriend. Right on. You know, so, I mean, yeah, you know, you don't want to interfere with people raising their kids because I said so. You know, but I'm just, why? Right on, man. You can't BS the little kids. Why? Hey, I mean, it's going to go through here. Go, what? You know, why? So, yeah, right on. So as time goes on, you have people that are able to get off the system by producing their own energy and by making things more efficient that do use energy. All right. What about transportation? Could be able to take these products and the communication you have between people to share services and just to meet, greet, be able to communicate with each other face to face. I'm Facebook with you forever, and now I want to, you know, see what you really look like without all the angles. Transportation. How cheap does it have to get? I fly on the airlines, and, you know, some are better than others. If I had to pick one that, you know, gives value for money and doesn't jerk around and, you know, kind of more pleasant, you know, the Southwest Airlines. U.S. Airways, heck no. United, lots of problems. I mean, if I had to pick one, Southwest Airlines, you know, bring your bag, it's on. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, those guys, and they do an efficient job, and I enjoy the trip. But I'm still, you know, cattle in a, you know, stall. I still, you know, it's hard to move around. My back hurts all the time. I get somewhere, I'm going to Massage Envy somewhere, some massage chain, and, you know, here rub my back, and now so I can survive the weekend. So this is, you know, what changes when you take the government out of the picture on how you are able to do air travel. Here in Arizona, they had two big giant military bases. One was Williams Air Force Base, and the other one's Luke. They still have Luke Air Force Base. It's training because you got 300 and whatever days of complete sunshine and almost no wind here. Where else are you going to go train? So Williams Air Force Base was, it's becoming kind of in town now. You know, there's so much expansion out in Gilbert Chandler area, which is kind of southeast of the main downtown Phoenix. Williams Air Force Base, they closed it. They made it available. So there was a lot of talk, we could have another international airport. What kind of international airport would we have in competition with Sky Harbor, which is in Central Phoenix? Why would you do it? What would be the difference? Do we have the freedom to have out there fly and die airlines? Now I just drive out to the tarmac because it used to be like that. Here in Arizona, Southwest, I remember Southwest Airlines, when it first started, they called it Terminal 1. Here they have Terminal 2, 3, 4 or something. They don't even have a Terminal 1 because Terminal 1 was taken out a long time ago. Terminal 1 was like in the old 1960s movies where you went in and you checked in, you're there, and you went outside and you walked up the stairs that went into the plane like you're getting on Air Force 1. It used to be that you could get on the plane, especially at Expresses, even Eastern Airlines were doing this between Boston in the early 80s, between Boston and Washington, D.C. and New York, New York to Boston, New York to D.C., vice versa. You get on the plane, they took your credit card there while you're on the plane. Okay, charge it, great run. It's just like getting on a bus. So I'm going, okay, we don't have that anymore. What happens if they do that with air travel and you get fly and die airlines? I want the risk. Yeah, bring on the terrorists. Just issue my 9mm because I forgot mine, and then we're all good. We'll go down fighting. Yeah, cool. Done. And you make fun of that, but, the real thing is are you allowed to make the choice? Do you have the freedom to do such a thing? And the reason for not doing that is, somebody's got to take care of me because they're threatened by somebody's freedom. These things are going to change because they have to. It's not sustainable the way it is now. Central planning never works. You look at all central planned governments always fail, and for the same reasons. It's always economic. It's an attitude. This last weekend, we had the Libertarian National Committee had their meeting in Austin. In the next hour, I'll tell you a little bit about what happened. I'm running for national chair. I kill the suspense. I won the straw poll. There was five candidates there, and I won the balloting. But I was very concerned about what people I talked to. And of course, I'm encouraged by a lot of people that really want to see a change and, get back to libertarian activists, go whip ass in Washington, D.C. But, the other side, it's amazing the resistance you get from some people, and they want to have a collective plan for freedom. There is no central plan for freedom. That's the whole point. We'll talk about it when we come back. Tomorrow morning, we're going to do a big show. Barry and I, Barry Hess, a gubernatorial candidate here for governor. He went with me, and we'll have a lot to talk about it then. But I'll go ahead and share with you some of my thoughts this evening. Why I wanted to talk about my hope for the future is just, it's not based on a government. It's based on us, our own ingenuity. Just the advancements in everything are coming so fast that I can barely keep up with them on Freedom's Phoenix, and I got 160 categories and 30 editors. Wow. We'll talk about it when we come back.